You know that feeling you get? You're in the shower, the water's hot, your mind starts to wander, and then bam, it hits you.
The idea.
The perfect idea is, it's brilliant. You think this is going to change the world. And then you get out, dry off, the mirror clears, and you have this sinking feeling.
The realization that you have absolutely no idea how to turn that shower thought into an actual functioning company.
Exactly.
That's the shower thought phase. It is, I mean, it's the most exciting and maybe the most dangerous time for any entrepreneur.
Because the gap between I have a great idea and I have to make payroll is just, it's a canyon.
It's a huge canyon. That's where most dreams go to die, really.
Yeah.
We call it the execution gap.
And that gap, that's exactly where we're going to be living today. We're
Yeah.
not just talking theory here. We've got a really fascinating primary source to dig into. It's a transcript of a high-stakes strategy meeting. So on one side of the table, you have Sarah, the CEO of a company called Root and Pulse, and on the other, a strategist named Alex.
And just to, set the scene a bit, Root and Pulse isn't some generic startup. They are right in the thick of the healthy snack industry.
Which is so crowded.
Oh, it's incredibly crowded, it's loud, and the margins are, frankly, razor thin. But what makes this transcript so valuable is that they're at a real tipping point.
A tipping point.
They're trying to figure out how to stop being just a cute local shop
Yeah.
and become a real national player.
Right. And our mission for this deep dive, it isn't to, critique their granola bars or something. We're going to use their conversation to really dissect the architecture of a business pivot. We're watching them build a machine.
And they're using a very specific framework to do it, a hierarchy of planning. They call it MOST,
MOST.
Mission Objective Strategy Tactics. Now, I know that sounds like Business School 101.
Right, something on a whiteboard.
Exactly. But seeing it in action in this dialogue, I mean, sticking to that hierarchy when everything's on fire is incredibly hard.
Yeah.
It's all about aligning the big dream with the nitty-gritty of, email open rates.
I have to say, reading through this, it's not dry stuff at all. We've got biohacking, some really aggressive financial targets, adaptogens.
It is a weird mix.
It's this collision of hard-nosed business logic and like modern wellness
Which
culture.
is a volatile mix. If you get it right, you can be the next unicorn brand. If you get it wrong,
Yeah.
you're just another box of bars in a discount bin.
Okay, so let's peel this back. Let's start where they do. The mission, the why. In the transcript, Alex pushes Sarah on this right away. He just asks, why does Root and Pulse exist?
And her answer is so interesting. It's not some corporate slogan.
No, it felt personal. It came from a place of frustration.
That's usually where the best missions come from, isn't it? Frustration. What specifically stood out to you?
She just calls out the whole industry. She says, and this is a quote, "The healthy snack aisle is actually full of junk." And as a consumer, I mean, I felt that. You feel that.
Oh, yeah.
You walk into a store, you grab something that has a green leaf on the package, the font looks kind of
And you
rustic.
turn it over.
You turn it over, and the second ingredient is high fructose corn syrup.
Right. That's the health washing phenomenon. It is a huge problem. You take a candy bar, you smash a vitamin into it, wrap it in brown paper, and now it costs $4.
So Sarah's trying to solve that deception. She says her mission is to bridge the gap between nutrition and daily convenience.
And that right there, that is her North Star.
But she goes a layer deeper. She defines her customer very, very sharply. She's not trying to sell to everybody. She's focused on what she calls the conscious consumer.
This is a really critical point in the text. She defines this person not as someone who's, on a diet to lose 10 pounds.
No.
She says it's someone who wants to optimize their brain and body performance through what they eat. So we're not talking about weight loss here. We're talking about utility, about functional eating.
Functional eating. That's such a shift in mindset, isn't it? It's not, I'm hungry, feed me.
Yeah.
It's, I have a big meeting in an hour. I need to fuel myself.
Precisely. And that dictates everything else for the business. If your mission is performance optimization, you cannot sell empty calories. You are selling a result. You're selling focus
Yeah.
or energy or clarity. The snack is just the delivery mechanism.
So that's the foundation, the mission. Now let's move down the ladder to the objectives. What? Because, missions are lovely.
But they don't pay the bills.
Exactly. And Sarah admits that pretty bluntly. She's looking at the next 12 months and she needs to hit some hard targets.
And this is where we leave the philosophy seminar and enter the boardroom. She gives Alex a very specific number. She wants to grow their monthly recurring revenue, their MRR, by 40%.
By the end of the year.
By the end of the year.
Okay, 40% is, that's aggressive. But I want to pause on that term, recurring revenue. For a software company, okay, that makes sense. Netflix, Spotify, we get it. But for a snack company, why MRR? Why not just sell more bars?
And because she's identified a trap in her current model,
Yeah.
she tells Alex, quote, "People buy once and forget us." In retail, we call this the leaky bucket.
The leaky bucket.
You spend all this money on marketing to get one customer to buy one bar. They eat it, maybe they even like it. But then life happens, and to get them to buy again, you basically have to pay to acquire them all over again.
That sounds exhausting and
Yeah.
expensive.
It kills your margins. So Sarah wants to shift to a subscription model because that stabilizes the whole business.
Well, yeah.
If she can get that conscious consumer to subscribe to a monthly box, her customer lifetime value, the CLV, it just
Okay,
skyrockets.
let's break that down. If I buy one coffee from you, one time, I'm worth what, $5?
$5. But if you subscribe,
Hmm.
you could be worth hundreds, maybe thousands over a few years. But even more importantly, the revenue becomes predictable. If you know you have $50,000 in subscriptions coming in next month, you can hire people. You can buy inventory in bulk for a cheaper price. If you're just relying on impulse buys at the register, you're waking up on the first of the month at zero.
She wants to be able to sleep at night.
That's what MRR buys you, sleep.
There's another objective she flags here too, a geographical one. She says they want to expand from their local city to a national e-commerce presence.
And that is a massive operational shift. Running a local shop where you can literally, shake hands with your customers. That's one
You
thing.
can fix a problem with a smile.
Exactly. Shipping adaptogenic coffee to a stranger in a suburb 3,000 miles away, that is a completely different sport. It requires different logistics, a different infrastructure, and most importantly, a totally different way of building trust.
Okay, so we have the mission, bridge nutrition and convenience for the optimizer. We have the objectives, 40% MRR growth, go national now. The messy part, the strategy, the how.
Right, how on earth do they pull this off?
What's the plan?
So Sarah outlines this two-pillar strategy, and it's fascinating because it really rejects the traditional food industry playbook. The first pillar is DTC first, direct to consumer.
Which ties back to that national expansion objective,
Yeah.
right? She says she wants the website to be the main engine.
Correct. And
Yeah.
this is a controversial move. A lot of advisors would tell a snack brand to go fight for shelf space in Whole Foods or Target.
That's where the people are.
That's where the foot traffic is. But Sarah argues that retail is a black box.
Meaning she doesn't actually know who's buying her stuff.
Exactly. If you buy a Root and Pulse bar at a supermarket, Sarah doesn't get your name. She doesn't have your email. She can't ask you if you liked it. She can't upsell you. By going DTC, first, she owns the data. She owns the relationship.
And it's much easier to sell a subscription on your own website.
Infinitely easier. You control the whole checkout flow.
Okay, that leads right into the second pillar, which I think is the most interesting part of this whole conversation. She calls it educational authority.
Yeah.
She has this fantastic line. She says, "We aren't just selling coffee, we're selling the science of adaptogens."
That is the key insight of the entire meeting.
So unpack that. Why is a food company trying to be a science teacher? Shouldn't they just focus on making the coffee taste good?
Because of her target audience, the conscious consumer.
Yeah.
These are not impulse buyers grabbing a Snickers.
No, they're reading the ingredients
They're
list.
reading the ingredients, they're researching terms like lion's mane mushroom or ashwagandha. They're skeptical. And Sarah realizes that to get these people to trust her brand with their daily brain chemistry, she can't just say it tastes yummy. She has to prove it works.
So she's positioning the company not just as a vendor, but as a resource, a partner.
She's building a moat made of information. If she can convince you that she understands your biology better than the other brands, you will trust her product. Trust is the absolute currency of the subscription economy.
It's like she's becoming a guru first and a snack merchant second.
In the modern boneless economy, that is so often the winning playbook. You see it with, certain brands, the content is what drives the commerce. The information
Right.
creates the demand.
Okay, so we've got the strategy, DTC first, and educational authority. Now let's get down to the ground level, the tactics, the now, what are the actual steps?
And this is where the transcript gets very tangible. She lists two specific tactics they're rolling out like right now.
The first one is a financial incentive, a subscribe and save program. It's a 15% discount on the website if you commit.
It's the classic lever. It's simple, but it directly supports that objective. She wants recurring revenue. Well, you bribe the customer nicely. You say, if you commit to us, we'll commit to you with a lower price.
It's a fair trade, but I do wonder, is 15% enough of a bribe?
That's the gamble. It cuts into her margin, for sure. But if it increases that lifetime value by keeping someone around for 6 months instead of one, the math works. It's a tactic designed specifically to plug that leaky bucket.
Okay, and the second tactic is where that educational authority strategy really comes to life. She's launching a weekly email newsletter.
Yep, and she has a name for it, Biohacking 101.
Biohacking 101, I mean, for her audience, that's brilliant branding. It promises actionable knowledge. It's saying, we're not just sending coupons, we're going to teach you how to hack your own biology.
That term, biohacking, it sounds so sci-fi, but it just means what? Eating better.
Basically, yeah. It's the engineering mindset applied to the human body, measuring inputs and outputs. It appeals to people who want control. And by using that word, Sarah is signaling, I speak your language.
It's much different than the natural foods crowd. It feels more like hard science. Or at least it presents that way.
But here's the kicker. This is where the transcript gets a little tense. Sarah isn't sure it's actually working.
This is the moment of vulnerability. She ends the whole segment with a question for Alex. She says, I need to know if that newsletter is actually driving sales or if people are just reading it and moving on.
And that is the million-dollar question for every single content creator, isn't it? You can have the best blog, the smartest newsletter, whatever, but if nobody clicks buy, are you actually a business?
Or are you just a nonprofit media company? This is the inherent danger of the educational authority strategy. You risk becoming a library instead of a store. You're giving away all this value for free.
Education, science, tips.
And you have to capture some of that value back in dollars. If Biohacking 101 is just a fun read for people, it's a hobby. It's not a marketing tactic.
It's like you're in the friend zone of business. Oh, Rude Impulse, I love your newsletter. You're so smart. But I'm going to go buy my coffee from the cheap place.
Precisely. And that's the tension Sarah's managing. She has the mission, she has the objective, she has the strategy. But the tactic, that newsletter, is the big question mark. Is it connecting the dots?
Oh, let's just zoom out. We've walked through this whole hierarchy. The mission, bridge the gap between nutrition and convenience.
Yep.
The objective, 40% growth in recurring revenue. The strategy, DTC and education. And the tactics, the 15% discount, and the biohacking newsletter.
It's a beautifully clear structure when you lay it all out, MOST.
And you can see how each layer supports the one above it. The newsletter tactic builds the authority strategy.
Right.
The authority builds trust, which drives retention, the objective. And that retention lets them fulfill their mission for the conscious consumer. It's all connected.
When it's working, it's a flywheel. It just spins faster and faster. The more you educate, the more they trust. The more they trust, the more they subscribe. The more they subscribe, the more money you have to make better products and even better content.
But if one of those pieces is broken,
the whole thing just grinds to a halt. If the newsletter's boring, the strategy fails. If the subscription software is clunky, the objective fails. If the product tastes bad,
the mission fails.
The whole thing falls apart.
So for everyone listening, just think about your own projects. Maybe you're running a business, maybe a team, maybe just trying to organize your own life. Do you have this kind of alignment?
A great diagnostic question. Are you busy with tactics? You know, sending emails, holding meetings that don't actually serve a clear objective.
Hmm.
Are you just doing stuff without knowing why?
The activity trap.
The activity trap. It's so common. Being busy does not mean you are being strategic.
Or you have the opposite problem. You've got a great mission, a huge dream, but no strategy to get there. You're just hoping.
And hope is not a strategy. Root and Pulse is a perfect case study because they're in that messy middle. They have the plan, but they don't know if it's working yet. And that's the reality of business. It's this constant process of checking your tactics against your objectives.
Is this email making us money?
Exactly. And if not, change the email or change the tactic entirely.
I keep going back to Sarah's worry about that newsletter. Are they just reading and moving on?
Yeah.
It really highlights the challenge of the modern economy. Every brand has to be a media company now.
But you still have to sell the snacks.
At the end of the day, you have to sell the snacks.
And that conscious consumer, remember, is smart. They're skeptical. They have access to infinite information. So Sarah is betting that by respecting their intelligence, by giving them the science, she can win their loyalty. It's a very respectful strategy, really.
It treats the customer like a peer, not a target.
Yeah.
I think that's why I'm rooting for them, rooting for Root and Pulse.
I'll allow the pun.
Thank you. But seriously, that pivot from local shop to national adaptogen brand, It's huge. And this makes you realize how many moving parts there are. It's not just about a better granola bar. It's about building a machine.
And building it without losing your soul, without losing that original mission of nutrition and convenience. That's the hardest part. As you scale, can you keep the quality high? Can you keep the biohacking science legitimate?
Right.
Or do you just dilute it to reach a mass audience?
That's the tipping point she's on.
That's exactly it. And it really forces us to think about the value of information itself in this whole equation.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with a thought. It comes directly from that anxiety Sarah expressed, this fear of becoming what I would call a free university.
It's a real danger, and it challenges the whole assumption of content marketing.
In this era where educational authority is the strategy, is there a danger that a brand can teach its customer too much?
It's a provocative question. If Root and Pulse does an amazing job explaining exactly which adaptogens maximize brain performance, say, they prove lion's mane is the key.
And they explain the science perfectly.
Perfectly. Does the customer then take that knowledge, go to Amazon, and just buy a generic bulk bag of lion's mane for half the price?
Right. If you teach me the recipe, do I still need to buy your pig? If the value you provide is the knowledge, well, once I have the knowledge, our transaction is over. How do you make sure learning leads to buying?
That's the real art. You have to make your product the hero of the story you're telling. You have to convince them that, yes, you could buy the generic powder, but you won't get our specific formulation, our convenience, our rigorous testing, our quality control. You have to sell the implementation, not just the information.
It's the difference between knowing how to build a car and just wanting to drive a Ferrari.
Exactly. Root and Pulse needs to be the Ferrari of adaptogens.
Something to chew on. Maybe with a healthy adaptogen-infused snack.
Optimizing your brain while you ponder business strategy. A perfect loop.
The ultimate biohack. Thanks for listening to this deep dive. We'll catch you on the next one.
Stay curious.